Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. W. Kamau Bell is a comedian, filmmaker, and author whose work explores culture, race, and society with a mix of humor and critical insight. As the host and executive producer of CNN's United Shades of America, Bell has brought stories of diversity and social issues to the forefront, earning multiple Emmy Awards. His dedication to thought-provoking storytelling extends to other projects like 1000% Me, Growing Up Mixed, which earned him a Children's and Family Emmy, as well as the docuseries We Need to Talk About Cosby. Bell recently completed his second stand-up residency, showcasing his unique perspective on modern life. And on Friday, you can catch him in the flesh. You can see him live at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis for an evening of comedy. And just a note, the Mondavi Center is a financial supporter of CAP Radio. Kamau, welcome to Insight.
Oh, thank you. Too bad we have no more time because my intro's so long.
I know. Well, you have a long resume.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, it's because I got three kids.
Yeah, you got to add that context, you know, before we jump in. Okay, so as you are well aware, I think you got a good amount of material given this week of all weeks that you're going to be at the Mondavi Center. Now that we're a couple days out of it, had some time to marinate on it, how are you feeling about the election?
It's funny, this morning I turned on my local news sources and it was the first time I realized when I heard Trump's voice, like, oh, I have to take this seriously again. Like, this guy's voice now is back to mean. I have to actually pay attention to what he says, and not just because I want to post a funny clip, but because it's going to actually have meaningful impact on my life and the lives of the people around me.
Yeah.
Like, and that was sort of a bummer. Like, oh, at least 4 more years of this. I say at least because it seems like he might not leave in 4 years.
Do you know of anyone in your circle who voted for him?
No. Not my, I keep a pretty tight circle. I got to be honest. I keep a pretty tight circle. Not, I mean, here's the thing. I'm sure there's people I am literally related to who probably voted for Trump. As I've talked about, my wife is white. I don't think anybody in her immediate family did, but certainly people, cousins and uncle I'm thinking about did, I'm sure. I've heard them talk about Obama when he was in office, sort of like, and I would walk out of that room. And, you know, my dad's from Alabama. He didn't vote for Trump, but he certainly knows people who voted for Trump because he lives in Alabama. So I certainly know those people, but in my inner circle, no. Not that I would say you can't hang out with me if you're voting for Trump, but there would just be other things that would prevent that person from hanging out with me.
Yeah. You know, can you find some humor in this election just, you know, 48 plus hours out from it?
I mean, I don't. People ask me that question as if it's some sort of like scientific process, and really,
like
it's just
an equation?
It's like reacting to what is happening in the world. I mean, you know, it's about like seeing what happens and sort of spontaneously reacting to it. And so, I don't think it's a thing where I have to like, how can I find the humor? I'm an only child, which I talk about a lot in my new show. So I'm in my head a lot, and I think that's where my stand-up comes from, is from being in my head a lot, thinking about things and sort of going like, is that funny? I think that might be funny. Let me say it in front of a group of people. I mean, there will be things I say tomorrow night on stage that I have never said before just because I haven't been on stage. And there are probably going to be things I'll never say again because it won't be 3 days out from the election ever again. So, yeah.
I'm an only child, too, so I can understand being in your own head.
Yep. Only children. If there was not white supremacy and racism in this country, I would identify myself as an only child.
As an only child. But I didn't go the route of comedy. So what drew you to comedy in your life?
I grew up in the age when comedy really started to really become mainstream. So like the 80s boom. So I remember watching comedy on TV. I remember when Seinfeld was the guy who on The Tonight Show who was like that. I remember when he was like my favorite comedian. Like, I like that guy. Nobody else knows who he is. I hope his sitcom goes well. You know what I mean? So I've been a fan of comedy for a long time. I'm 51 years old, which means I'm basically the same age as Saturday Night Live. So I've been watching Saturday Night Live my whole life. I've thought it hasn't been going well since Garrett Morris left. So like, so I've just always been a fan of comedy. And I think as an only child, you can find yourself really fascinating and interesting. And my mom was an easy laugh, so I thought I was funny.
I want to touch upon just quickly your docuseries on CNN, United Shades of America. Mm-hmm. You did meet people from all walks of life and learned a great deal, probably people you wouldn't agree with in your normal life, in your tight circle. What did you learn from that docuseries?
That, I mean, it's what we're sort of going through right now in this country. The powers that be, and this can be on both sides, but certainly in my humble opinion, worse in the Republican Party, are using our differences against us in a way that is intentionally set up to divide us. So there are, when you see that like Latino men voted in higher numbers for Trump than they had before, you're like, how are you doing that when you hear the words mass deportation? Because maybe you're a citizen, But you definitely have people in your life and your community who are not citizens. So the idea that people are able to have their differences weaponized against each other, when it comes right down to it, ex-coal miners in Appalachia who I talked to in United Shades who are mostly white, and ex-gang members on the south side of Chicago who are mostly black want good schools, want better, safer neighborhoods, want more higher wages, want better access to their community resources. They want the same thing, but the powers that be are set up because money has taken over politics. We are weaponizing our differences against each other.
How do you recommend we navigate people who have different viewpoints than ours, especially if we feel threatened by them?
If we feel threatened by them, leave. Get out of the space. Like I don't.
But sometimes we can't because those people can shape policy, right?
Oh, okay.
Also shape also tough conversations around the dinner table or at the workplace.
This is where I've sort of come to in the immediate aftermath of this current election. First, start before you even get to that person. Start with yourself. Make sure you're healthy as you can be. Make sure you're mentally, physically, psychologically healthy. Shout out to my therapist, Cliff. You know, so you have to, we really have to take care of ourselves. And I don't mean that in a selfish way. I mean like so I can be ready for the next step. Then take care of your family. If you can do that, you're already winning. If you can take care of yourself and your family, then if you can get to that, take care of your community. And this is all steps. Not everybody, some people can't get past taking care of themselves, but I think that's the way you got to do it. And then you can figure out how do I confront people at City Hall. But I think if you just get to your community and the people, making sure that if you have the resources and bandwidth to help people in your community, I think we got to stop thinking that politicians are here to save us. We're here to push the politicians to do the right thing, whether they want to or not.
I also love your shirt. Love is still the most powerful force on the planet.
Yes.
How do you find joy during this time? If you are on the side that isn't happy about the results.
I mean, I'm old enough again to remember the show is about how I accept my oldness now, which is great because now I can make fun of old people. To remember Reagan. You know, when I was a kid, it was like people were like, this actor from California, I didn't live in California at the time, is the president. So I think some of this is like cyclical, but also some of this is like, again, I think it's easy to get caught up in the pop culture of politics and really not get caught up in the like, how is this affecting my life? So like right now, I really think it's important for me at my level of like platform is to really just focus, like I live in Oakland, focus on Oakland and what can I do? Well, I'm a filmmaker and a creator and a comedian. Then focus on the film community and how to provide jobs there and how to provide resources there. Go talk to a local school about the jobs in show business that aren't directing and acting. So I think for me, it's about like focusing on what I can do and focus and not getting caught up in like, I'm not going to battle Trump for 4 years or till the end of time, depending on how long he wants to be president. I'm just not going to spend my time doing that. I mean, one of the things I did recently for mental health is like yesterday, I was like, I officially, and I really feel it this time, I was like, okay, I'm done with Twitter. Okay. We had a run.
I can understand that.
But now that Elon Musk is also going to be somehow in the cabinet, probably I cannot support this thing. So you have to take care of your mental health.
Yeah, and when I agree with that, I mean just social media at large, especially you gotta hit the pause or the stop button, flip that phone over, you know, put it in your sock drawer, whatever, because it can get pretty heavy, and I just don't think it's good for your cortisol levels.
It's not. I mean, I think that's one thing is like don't. You talked about earlier about what do you do with people in your life. Only fight the battles that are worth fighting. And I think sometimes we get seduced into fighting battles on social media or even conversations with our friends where we argue that aren't really worth fighting because there's, to quote the every mafia movie, there's no percentage in it for you. There's nothing you're going to get out of winning. You're not winning that battle. You're just sort of looking for some sort of adrenaline boost. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's like, fight the battles that are worth fighting. Like the other night, my daughter was like, when she was watching the election returns come in, she was like, I can't focus on my homework in the election returns. And I was like, then don't worry about your homework tonight. Have your teacher call me. I will fight that battle for you. I don't want my daughter to fight the homework battle when a historic election is coming in and it's not going the way she wanted to. So fight the battles that are worth it. Don't fight, don't get seduced in fighting battles that are not worth it.
Yeah, I also think, and I had this conversation yesterday just about how you navigate difficult conversations after an election. You know, on the one hand, there's a solution of like you can cut people out of your life or you could just avoid talking politics with mm-hmm. people that you care about that you can't really cut out of your life. But there could also be harm to that as well. I mean, how do you navigate that balance?
I mean, so again, I think it's like you say, you have to figure out one, how important is this relationship to me? And then once answer that question and you might find out it's less important than you think it is. Like, do I need this person? So I think we think of cutting people out of our life as a negative thing. And really it's like, no, it's actually a healthy thing if that person's really toxic. So, and then two, it could, like, let's say it's your grandfather. You don't want to cut your grandfather out of your life. then you know very few conversations have changed the world in one conversation. And there's, and so don't expect, I think we expect, I talked to my grandfather and he didn't change. It all takes time. And I know it happened in my life with my wife's grandfather, who was initially very resistant to having a black, his granddaughter dating a black man. And it took years, but we totally, but it came around because her relationship with grandfather was important to her. Therefore, it was important to me. Therefore, it came around. But it took years. But by the end, he was like, he would watch Fox News until United States of America was on, and then he would turn to CNN to watch United States of America. So I think you have to realize this stuff takes time, and it takes multiple different techniques. Sometimes it's about fighting, sometimes about making that person laugh, sometimes about emailing an article, sometimes about telling them a story. It's not just one technique.
Hmm. Okay, so tomorrow you're going to be at UC Davis at the Mondavi Center. An evening of comedy with yours truly.
Yeah.
What can people expect?
Well, one of my best friends, and who's actually my political consigliere, Nato Green, who's a great Bay Area comedian and also a union organizer, is opening the show. Nato's literally the guy I called before the election's like, what do I do with all these propositions? So Nato's going to be there. And my kids are going to be there, and we've actually worked up some things that we do in my act, but it depends on the audience. So if you want to come to the Mondavi Center and you want to act right, you might get to hang out. You might get to see my kids on stage.
So it can be interactive.
Oh, yeah, it could be. Well, it depends. If you just see me all night, then you know you weren't a very nice audience.
Oh.
But it might be my kids, depending on how well everybody acts.
Finally, we only have a couple minutes left, and I did want to plug your Substack, who's with me. You have 45,000 subscribers.
Well, you know, it's because I used to have a thing called an email newsletter, so I just imported them to, but yeah, we're actually having an emergency post-election Zoom where I get on a Zoom and talk to my subscribers. So if you want to be a paid subscriber, you can join the Zoom, but you can also just read the Substack and follow for free. So yeah, no, it's been a great place to like sort of channel all of the things that I don't have any place else to put them. So I've done a lot of writing on that, which has helped.
I do have a selfish question since we have a little bit of time. I love Top Chef.
On Top Chef. Yeah, I got to that. Living the dream.
Yeah.
I got to do Top Chef. Quick story about Top Chef. So I was only supposed to do the quick fire challenge. And when I found that out, I was bummed out. I wanted to be there for the whole show. So I was like, okay, Kamau, your job is to do so well in quick fire that they ask you to stay. And that's exactly what happened. So when you see me at the whole show at the end, I did that because I was like, I'm going to be funny. I'm going to be smart. I'm going to shut up when I'm time to shut up. And I'll say this. Kristen Kish is like... a machine. Like, she is like, she's so good at what she does. And I told her, whatever you do after this, I just want to be your sidekick. So
when my mom and I watch it and someone, you know, gets really criticized for their dish, we think like, could it really be that bad? Could it really be that bad? Did you get like a bad dish?
I got a bad dish and I felt bad because I said something funny about it that they kept in the show. It was, so it wasn't the chef's fault. They were supposed to make old school recipes from like a cookbook from the 50s. And one of them was a savory raisin sauce.
Okay.
And they put.
I remember that.
Yeah. And she put on a frittata. And backstage, when we were tasting it, I said, this seems like when you listen to two different radio stations at the same time, like it tastes like Taylor Swift and Slipknot. And they were like, that's funny, say that. And I said it, and the woman's face fell. And I was like, I didn't mean to be mean. They just said it was funny. So, yeah. But no, it's there. The food was way better than I thought it was going to be generally. But there is some times where you're like we had steaks in the final round. They only showed one of them. And I kept making jokes about how the steaks were so raw. They still had a name. They still had opinions. They had they were mooing because the steaks were. And so you were chewing like red raw meat. So that was bad.
Well, it is a TV show. Kamau, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
W. Kamau Bell is a comedian, author, and director. If you want to see him, he's going to be at the Mondavi Center at UC Davis tomorrow night. And again, the Mondavi Center is a financial supporter of Cap Radio. That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about all of our guests, capradio.org/insight. We also have the Insight podcast. And if you want to reach out to us, email us, insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and Jen Picard. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz. Our audio engineer is Tyler Webb. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. And our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here after the holiday on Tuesday.